Yes, indeed. Welcome on into our Treasure Chest Thursday. It is October the 3rd. We are at the bar game, the game bar and grill, sorry, here in the Treasure Chest Casino right next to the FanDuel Sportsbook. Thursday night football on tap, folks. A big one for Saints fans to be interested in. Atlanta Falcons and Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That'll be coming up 7 o'clock, of course, here at the casino and on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Mike, first off to bat, though, with the Saints, we got the initial injury report now for Week 5, and it is pretty lengthy, to say the least.
Yeah, we were just taking a look at that. And again, no surprise, because he had posted it on his Instagram page that something had happened with his hand or his arm. Willie Gay was out. Taysom Hill, we heard Coach Dennis Allen talked about
fractured
ribs.
Yeah.
We'll see how long that'll take. Normally that's a couple of weeks, at least four, of you know, to come back from there. Because, I mean, you can put the guard on it, but it's already fractured.
Yeah.
Cesar Ruiz with the knee injury. Shane Lemieux now, I did hear Dennis Allen say he didn't think it was serious with an ankle injury. Peyton Turner with a knee injury. When that happened? And even worse, Blake Groupie with a right hip injury. Man.
He's a right-legged kicker, too, right? Not a lefty.
that ain't good. But, again, the usual suspects on the limited this time of year, and I think you'll probably see him all year long. Taliese Fuaga with the back. Alvin Kamara with the hip and rib injury.
Hip and rib.
Yeah. A.T. Perry, hamstring. Juwan Johnson, forearm. Brian Bursay, he's new to the list, too, with an ankle injury. Chris Olave, hamstring. Cedric Wilson Jr. with an ankle injury. He was a full participant along with Olave. Now, new to the list, Kendra Miller, limited, but he was practicing with the hamstring. You know, Deuce and I were talking about this yesterday. It's going to be sooner than later that Kendra Miller hits the field. Come on, you need him.
Absolutely.
I mean, how long have you been battling this hamstring injury since the
day
start
one
of training
camp? And actually, he was dealing with injury issues in minicamp as well.
My thing is, you need him. This is why you picked him, you know, not to watch.
Also limited today, too. There was a late add to the list was DeMario, still with that hamstring issue.
I think DeMario plays this week. He might have missed one week.
Right.
But I don't think he misses a second one. You get an extra day, certainly, with the Monday night game. And for the Chiefs, Mike Dana, who's limited, Kareem Hunt with the shoulder, who's limited, and Mecole Hardman with a knee that was limited.
Man, they've had terrible luck with wide receivers at Kansas City.
And then Rashid Rice got put on IR today. Now, they'll let that knee sort of, you know, kind of calm down a little bit, and you'll find out the full extent. Initially, it looked as though he would miss the rest of the season. We'll see what happens with that. Nick Bolton, full participant today. I saw when he actually kind of pulled up with the hamstring. And Derek Nnadi with the triceps, he was a full participant. That list is real short. That's the way I look at it. Man.
It's like a quarter of the Saints injury list.
Man, the Saints got a long injury list. But you find out now, because if Cesar Ruiz can play, now you're going to reshuffle your offensive line again.
Right.
Now, again, from what Coach Allen was saying, sounds as though Lemieux's ankle is not serious. Would you make that move and put Lucas Patrick at center if Ruiz is a go at guard, Landon Young at the other guard spot? Would you do that? And because, again, it's going to be a reshuffled lineup if Cesar Ruiz can't answer the bell this week, and again, did not participate. So we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Positive for me, Mike, not seeing a name like Tyrann Mathieu on here. Obviously was dealing with a few things with the foot, and then I know injured his groin a little bit last game, but not even showing up at the injury report list at all. So that's a huge positive for him. Obviously, going back to Kansas City.
I thought
City,
he'd be an LP.
Right, for sure. He's not even listed as a full participant with an injury issue. So, yeah, like I said, that's positive news for Tyron. And as we know, spent some time with Kansas City, won a Super Bowl there. So one of the guys I know got to be looking forward to making a trip back to Arrowhead Stadium.
Yeah, no question about it. But if you knew you were going to run this type offense and where the running backs are really going to carry a big portion of the load, man, you were really counting on Kendra Miller. You were counting
for sure
on him. And he's been a no-show. We'll see if he can answer the bell Monday night, but you need him now. And, you know, what Jamal Williams has what touched the ball three times? Oh, the last two games,
right.
What? It shows me you don't really trust that he can carry the workload at any time. I know we had a guy last week. He texted in. Charlie sent me that. He's the best running back we got on the team. What? Come on, dude. I know they got TVs for sale somewhere. Right now, I think, man, you think Alvin's carrying the load last week? He really carried the load Monday night.
And when you see, obviously, the two main running backs for you is Kamara and Hill, and Taysom with fractures in the rib can't be good.
Right. I would be absolutely shocked. Again, you can protect it, but it's already fractured. Actually, Hebert about that. He can tell you about that. He wore that first one. It looked like a barrel was around him. But once it gets, you know, fractured and hurt, you can wear the protective device. It don't do you no good.
No, I talked to him, and he said right away, well, if he wants those ribs to fully heal, 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's at least that particular part. And so long injury list, playing a team that, man, they've had some injuries, though. That two starting receivers, starting running back, but their defense has carded them. And that dude named Mahomes can still play. He can still play.
The Monday night matchup in Kansas City going to be a tough one. Obviously, we know that defending back-to-back Super Bowl champs, Kansas City Chiefs are 4-0 on the season. Can the black and gold find a way to hand them that first loss? We're going to take a break, be back with more of Sports Talk. We are at the Game Bar and Grill at the Treasure Chest Casino. Hope to see you here. We're here till 7 o'clock. That's when Thursday night football between the Falcons and Bucks will kick off right here on WWL and the Odyssey app. Coming right back after this here on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Steve Geller, Mike Dettillier at the Treasure Chest Casino. Hope you stop by. We're here till 7 o'clock this evening. Then it's Thursday night football, and we got a good one on tap tonight. The Atlanta Falcons hosting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and do a little scouting on those Bucks as they'll be next up for the Saints after, man, a really short week for New Orleans, where Tampa Bay gets that extra rest heading into a Sunday matchup in the Superdome.
You would figure.
Of course, right.
Yeah. Set up for them. And tonight I know they banged up. But they got a really good young team, Steve. Talk about a quiet rebuild. They were able to do it, you know, with Brady leaving, and then Gronkowski and a number of the guys on the defensive side, the football left out. They got one of the youngest teams in the NFL. They've drafted real well the last 3 years. Big key, though. They hit with Baker Mayfield.
Yeah. Just when you they think he's washed up, man. He comes back and shows he's got something.
Yeah. And, again, you know, Mike Evans makes a lot of people look good, as Tom Brady said last week. But that defense has really been banged up this year. And the big man in the middle, you know, he's hurting, but he's playing. We'll see what happens tonight. One thing the Saints did not do was get a pass rush on Kirk Cousins last week.
That's a fact.
And, you know, if you can get after him, because he ain't going too far. I know where he's at in the pocket is to get him. Let's see if Tampa does a little bit more from a blitz standpoint. One of the things with Todd Bowles, he's been known to kind of show you something, pull out of, and then show you something else. We'll see what happens tonight, but I think that's a key to basically getting pressure on Cousins. And if you can't throw the football, then I play heavy up front.
Yeah, like you said, there was way too many times he was just picking apart that Saints secondary. He had all day.
He had time to throw. And I don't know what it is with players, but certain players have really good games against certain teams. Tyler Allgeier, every time he plays the Saints, it's not Bijan.
Right.
Bijan catches the ball so well coming out of the backfield. But, man, Tyler Allgeier, we went through the list of like it was a 7-yard run, 11-yard run, 14-yard run. And he was just sort of carving you up. Just his style of runner. He's a shortcut runner, a lot of power in the lower body. He's not going to give you a lot of wiggle. But, man, he hits that hole and he's through it and he pops you but good. So, interesting game tonight. I picked the Bucks, so I'm pulling for Tampa.
Yeah, my wife was asking me, who do I root for tonight? You root for a tie, I told her.
Tie?
It hurts both of them.
Okay, your wife ain't a gambler.
Right, no.
Neither am I, but what I'm saying is it'll be interesting how it's set up tonight because, man, that short week for the Falcons, and they haven't really shown to me the offensive firepower people were talking about before the season. I think they played really better on defense than anybody thought.
Right.
But they haven't played nearly as well on the offensive side of the football. And they suffering with injuries, too, up front along their offensive line.
That'll definitely be a fun one to watch. Obviously, a lot of interest for Saints fans. Looking back at that Saints injury report, obviously, we talked about Kendra Miller back in action for the Saints today. He'd been dealing with a hamstring injury, and Dennis Allen was asked how the running back's doing.
Well, he practiced today, and so we'll just see how he goes, you know, throughout the course of the week, you know. And I think we'll just kind of evaluate where he's at kind of on a day-to-day basis.
What would his return add?
I don't know yet. You know, I mean, I would be hopeful that it would add another playmaker to our team, another guy that can be explosive for us, you know, and I'm hopeful that that's what that is. But I think we need to see him practice, see him perform. I thought he had a good practice today. I thought he did some good things. So it was good to have him back out there.
Yeah, Dennis Allen right there talking about Kendra Millen, and like I really don't know what he can add to this offense right now. We're just hoping he can put in a couple of days of good practice right now leading up to the game.
Man, that ain't no ringing endorsement, Steve.
No, right.
Man, he went all around answering the question.
Sure, and you heard Dennis Allen's frustration at training camp and he kept asking about him. Right, exactly.
Not once, but twice. And so that wasn't a ringing pat on the back for Kendra Miller. Come on, go out there and do it. That's why they picked you in the third round. But if you got a hamstring injury to start training camp and you still fool it dealing with that, man, that would last a long time.
Looking also at the injuries, Dennis Allen asked about the status of Taysom Hill and those rib injuries. Is it something for Taysom where they're broken?
He's got fractures, you know, but exactly, you know, what all they are.
Don't exactly know what all they are. He just would say fractures with the rib injury, and definitely something that was on a different side than the initial chest injury Taysom had suffered going into the year. So, man, oh, man, just everything in Taysom's, you know, midsection there has got to be sore.
Yeah, he's telling you, you're not finding out what I know. I can read that between the lines, too.
Short and sweet, right.
Yeah, but come on, he's such a big part of this offense. We saw when he went down in the second quarter, the offense didn't run as well. Didn't. And so, man, you're missing a big cog there, not having Taysom in the lineup as a runner, receiver, and the threat. Every time he's in the huddle of where is he going to line up.
Exactly.
And
you
don't have a lot of time
about that right away.
You don't have a lot of times to adjust to it.
We're going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to go to Kansas City, talk to Bob Fesco, who's a host on 610 Sports Radio out there. Get a little gauge on this Kansas City Chiefs team. Sure, they're winning ugly, but 4-0 is sure a lot prettier than 2-2, and the Chiefs know how to close out games. So definitely a scary, dangerous matchup in hostile Arrowhead Stadium, one of the loudest venues that the Saints will have to face on the road. Come back, get a gauge on those Chiefs when we get back off right here at the Treasure Chest Casino on Sports Talk here on WWL. Who dat? Yes, indeed. Countdown to Thursday Night Football, NFC South battle between those Atlanta Falcons and Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But for the Saints Nation, getting ready for also Monday Night Football, which will be in Kansas City. The 4-0 Chiefs helping us break that matchup down. Bob Fesco, host on 610 Sports Radio KC. Bob, how you been, man?
I've been good, man. How about you guys?
We're doing all right, you know, getting ready for a matchup Monday in a very hostile Arrowhead Stadium, definitely one of the scarier venues the Saints will have to visit this season. And I know all hasn't been perfect in KC, even though there's a 4-0 record right now. They just found the way to close out games and to come out with that win. And you got to give credit to the quarterback and Patrick Mahomes. I know he hasn't had the greatest start to the season, but in the end, when you got that guy leading your team, you're always in the game. We know that obviously from having Drew Brees here all these years.
Bob, the best part is that defense backing him up, right?
Well, the thing is, the defense has been playing awesome. I mean, that's the reason why this team is 4-0. It really doesn't have much to do with Patrick Mahomes. He's been very very mid, as the kids like to say these days, you know, at the quarterback spot. He's been off. He's thrown a couple interceptions. He, you know, knocked Rashee Rice out for at least four games. So it hasn't been exactly a great start to the season for the quarterback. But when it matters most, he knows how to win football games. And that's what it's about. You don't have to win games with style points in the NFL. And I think sometimes people get lost in that. Like, oh, my God, why aren't they winning by 40? Well, because you don't win by 40 in the NFL. You know, you win by six, and that's considered a blowout these days, you know, in the league. And offense has come back to the pack in the entire league. Nobody's thrown for over 300 yards. Defenses have ramped up. They've gotten better over the last couple of years. Better athletes are playing on the defensive side of the football. And so they're doing what they have to do to find ways to win. And, you know, I think some people are still living in 2018 and think every season is going to be 50 touchdowns and 5,000 yards out of Patrick Mahomes. But he's learned how to win games with the talent that he has and with what the defense has given him. And if they're taking away the deep ball and all that, we'll just, you know, dunk it down underneath and feel good about ourselves and get out of there with a win.
Bob, one of the things, I mean, you guys have had a ton of injuries on the offensive side of football. Been a little luckier, certainly on the defensive side of football. Lost a couple key cogs. Willie Gay signs on with the Saints. And Darius Sneed, man, I go back a long way with him when he was in high school. And I know he really didn't want to leave Kansas City, but it came down to finances. They deal him off to the Titans. The defense, how well that they have selected players. You know, you look at that team for the most part defensively, those are all draft choices. They've rarely have early round misses on the defensive side of football. That has really been the calling card for the start of the season last year and then again this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, it really has been, and it's good of you to notice that, because most people just truly focus on the offense when it comes to the Chiefs. But really, for the last couple of years, Brett Beach has been quietly stockpiling talent on the defensive side. George Karlaftis and Trent McDuffie in the same draft in the same first round. I mean, come on now, what are we doing? And then you go out and you sign, you know, Justin Reed to come in and take over for the Honey Badger after they, you know, let him go, and he ended up signing down there with you guys. He's playing like he's a rookie. I mean, he's just dominating. His performance last week against the Chargers, my God, I mean, makes you want to smoke a pack of cigarettes after watching him play. Stopping the run, getting sacks, pressure on the quarterback. Like, he's found a new lease on life, and he's getting paid, and he's earning all his money. And, you know, Nick Bolton started out a little bit slow, but he's starting to play better now at that linebacker position. He's kind of the captain of that defense. But, I mean, if you really want the cheat code to the NFL, teams need to pay attention to what Brett Beach is doing, because 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago now, he started really using high draft picks on the defensive side of the football. And look where we are now in this era of the NFL. Defenses may be better than offenses right now in this league. Very rarely are you seeing a 30-point effort anymore. And, you know, quarterbacks aren't throwing for 300 yards like we talked about. The overs aren't hitting and the underdogs are winning. And, you know, like Brett Beach kind of saw this coming. He saw this coming, you know, in the past as well with the way that he goes out there and drafts. He just has a knack of knowing what's coming next in the NFL. And for the last 2 years, man, he's just been loading up on the defensive side of the ball. Felix Anudike Uzama was picked a year ago in the first round, and he kind of had a red shirt year last year, but he's getting pressure on the quarterback now. And, you know, it's just remarkable to watch how this organization seemingly is a year or two ahead of the rest of the NFL.
With the running back situation, losing Pacheco, which I think he's an underrated part of that offense and what he's brought to the table as a seventh-round pick. But, you know, Brett was able to bring in a young man that I saw him play at Indiana, and he goes to UCLA, and Carson Steele at running back. Is he going to carry the load? Because I know with Samaje Perine, he's more of a receiver coming out of the backfield, catches the ball really well. And then they bring in the veteran Kareem Hunt. So, man, that's a major loss in not having Pacheco in the backfield, and you're counting on the Rook to take a lot more carries than you probably thought once he made the football team.
Well, and you know, I think you and I have a better chance of carrying the football before Carson Steele does at this point in time. I mean, he's had two fumbles in the last couple of weeks. You fumble once as a young guy, Andy puts you right back in there. You fumble a second time, you don't see the field much after that. And so it's a good thing they went out and got Kareem Hunt, who looked really good the other day. I mean, for a guy who hasn't done anything since January, it looked like he'd been playing football. So I'm like, all right, I kind of like what I see, you know, with him. But that loss of Pacheco really is big. And you mentioned the seventh-round draft pick. I mean, he was the guy that was taken, I want to say, the year after COVID, and kind of got lost in that COVID shuffle where guys were getting an extra year and staying around, and people kind of forgot about Isaiah Pacheco. So when he was sitting there in the seventh round, and Brett picked him. I'm like, that's a really nice pick. And then going to training camp that year he was drafted, I'm like, damn, this kid looks good. He looks really, really good. And he's been really, really good for this team. The other good news, bit of good news for the Chiefs is as you get, you know, to the point where you get Clyde Edwards-Helaire back now. He's missed his four games, and I think he's eligible to come off the list this week. And so we'll see if he's a guy that's going to be, you know, part of this offense going forward and what he can bring to the table. And I still think they're counting on him, even though he hasn't, you know, played yet this season and he's dealing with his stuff off the field. I still think they're counting on him, and I still think he can be a big part to this offense as well from that running back position. But, I mean, as long as you have Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, they figure things out. They lose guys. They create a new playbook. They create new plays. They create a new philosophy. They implement that philosophy all week, and they go out there and they execute on Sundays. And so, I mean, like, guys get hurt all the time in the NFL, and people are like, aren't you upset that Rashi Rice is hurt, that Pacheco is hurt? I'm like, nah, I got Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. They'll figure this thing out. And Steve Spagnuolo knows how to coordinate a defense. He'll give up a touchdown or a field goal on the first drive, but you ain't seen the red zone after that.
Rice, to me, though, had really emerged this year before the injury, and he had some off-the-field issues too. But lose Hollywood Brown before the season even starts, and then to lose Rice, man, because, you know, you spent a few nickels, so to speak, to bring in Hollywood Brown, and you were counting on Rice. Now that's seemingly not going to be there. Is this a team that you could see in the past that they kind of featured their offense to Travis Kelce to get that more? And not that Kelsey's not still a productive player, but he's not the guy of a few years back. But they're playing a lot more tight end sets, I see today. So how big of a change is that going to make offensively without Rice? And are we going to see a lot more? And they always did it with a couple tight ends to begin with. Will we see more of that from the Chiefs offense?
Well, they paid Noah Gray like the week before the season started, their backup tight end who they drafted a couple of years ago. We're like, that's weird. You know, you're paying this guy who, I don't know, didn't really do much, but they gave him an extension and they gave him some money. So I would think because of that, he's probably going to be featured a little bit more, you know, now in the offense. I'm not a Travis Kelce truther or whatever you want to call it, where people think he's lost the step, because I saw what he did last week. I mean, he's still the focal point of this offense, and teams are still going out there and trying to take him out of the game in every situation that he's in. They know that he can beat you on one play. So I'm not to that level with Travis Kelce. I still think he's a hell of a football player, and I wouldn't be sleeping on him if I was the Saints, you know, this week. But I'd like to get Gray involved. Devin Wiley's another kid that they drafted at tight end this year, you know, and they have real high hopes for him. I'd like to see him get involved more. But, you know, Xavier Worthy from Texas is the fastest guy that's ever been to the combine. And so, I mean, they're going to start throwing the football to him. They still have Juju Smith-Schuster in that arsenal right now. Mecole Hardman, a very underrated, underutilized player in the past with Kansas City. I think he has an opportunity to make an impact. And so they're going to do some stuff we probably haven't seen in quite a while from that offense, and some stuff that we're kind of scratching our heads and go, man, I didn't know they had that in their playbook. But when they get these injuries, they have to adjust. And that's part of the reason also, too, they've been able to stay on top, because they don't let injuries bog them down. They don't get flustered. They don't get frustrated by, you know, their team losing a player. They just move on, next man up, and they figure it out. And it's a great mentality and a great mindset to have, and it works.
Bob, you mentioned Xavier Worthy. What have been the early reviews on the Chiefs' first-round pick?
He can run.
Oh, boy, my. I mean, I don't know that I've ever seen anybody that fast. Yeah, Tyreek Hill for a while, you know. And I mean, this guy, boy, he can burn it down the field, and he's got great hands. And, you know, it's fun, you know. Like, sometimes we forget that it's okay just to say it's fun in sports to watch these guys. We're trying to come up with these creative takes and ways to, you know, talk about it. But Xavier Worthy's just fun. And he gets past those defensive backs and runs by them and waves and, you know, catches the ball, touchdown, and it's 54 yards or whatever it is. And you're like, man, that was wild. That was awesome. And so he'll probably get more involved as well. I think he's going to be the guy that kind of takes over those slant patterns that Rashi Rice had in the first couple of weeks that I love so much. And I could see Xavier Worthy going across the middle, Patrick hitting him in stride and just zoom right to the end zone for a touchdown. And Arrowhead goes wild as they're watching the, you know, the Chiefs do their action on the field and the Royals on the phone, because Monday night's going to be a big night here in Kansas City.
Bob, the impact of Chris Jones, got to see him in high school and then certainly covering him in the SEC at Mississippi State. And he was a guy He got freakish talent. Now, in college, it depended on when he wanted to play. And in talking to Brandon Daly, he comes to our Louisiana line camp every year, and also the Chiefs defensive line coach. And they were talking about Chris that, man, when he's revved up, that's nobody that's going to block him. And Pete Jenkins, 83-year-old defensive line coach who's been all over, also has worked with the Chiefs defensive lineman. He made the comment to me, he said, Aaron Donald is the best interior pass rusher I've ever seen in my lifetime. But he doesn't play to run like Chris Jones does. He said, I think he's underrated for what he does against the run. And he said, man, he influences the quarterback as soon as he steps on the field. So the impact you've seen and the progression with Chris, well, I think with his maturity as a player, I think you see it today.
You do, and it's a good observation because he does play good against the run. And, you know, a lot of times we just give the defensive lineman credit because they got a sack or they affected the pass or whatever the case may be. But Chris Jones was great last week against the run. I mean, he's been great all year against the run. The Chiefs have been great all year against the run. Nobody's running on, you know, these guys at all. I mean, Bijan Robinson, I don't even know that he suited up 2 weeks ago for the Atlanta Falcons. That's how, you know, good they did. I think they held him to like 39 yards or something like that. So, you know, Chris Jones is a big reason why. But also, too, they've got a lot of good defensive linemen that they can just rotate in. It's the Spags calling card. You know, when you have these guys on defense, on the defensive line, that you can go two in some positions three deep, you're keeping guys fresh all the time. So Chris Jones is never going to be tired. He's never going to be gassed. He's just going to be out there making plays.
Bob, definitely appreciate the time. Thank you for some insights on the Chiefs.
Thank you, Bob.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Thank you.
Host of 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City. The Saints will be there Monday taking on the 4-0 Chiefs. We'll have that for you, obviously, WWLAMFM.com and, of course, on the Odyssey app. We are at the Treasure Chest Casino. Make sure you stop by the Game Bar and Grill and say hi. Stick around for Thursday Night Football. The Atlanta Falcons and Tampa Bay Buccaneers kicking it off at 7 p.m. We're going to take a break and be back with more of Sports Talk right after this on WWL. We're back here on Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest Casino, the Game Bar and Grill out in Kenna, Louisiana. Mike, we're getting ready for a Thursday night contest. I think obviously has a huge interest for Saints fans because of it's an NFC South divisional matchup, and obviously just played the Falcons. They improved to 2-2 in the season, and right now the Bucs in the lead in the division at 3-1. So curious to see how this one shakes out. Not really sure who you root for in this one as a Saints fan.
Well, I picked Tampa, so I'm pulling.
There you go. Go with the money.
But you know, if I'd have picked for Atlanta, I'd pick them. But pull for them. But, again, this franchise is both sort of looking at it a little bit different. Atlanta, veteran football team on both sides of the football, very experienced offensive line before the injuries. You got Kirk Cousins at quarterback. You got your next guy. He's waiting in the wings. You know, when Kirk starts to – sort of downhill it a little bit, Michael Penix. But, man, I'm just so impressed. Similar to Kansas City on how the Bucs have drafted the last 3 years.
Right.
And you think about, give me a big-name free agent they've signed over the last 2 years. Baker,
right, I was going to say, exactly.
And that's it. They basically have built this team through the draft and have done a great job of finding players that fit what they do. And they do best offensively, defensively, and on special teams. So it's crazy to see that they were 3 years ago the oldest team in the NFL. And now they're one of the youngest. And it goes to show you, you know, Gronk and Brady put a little bit of age on that on that team, too. Man, they've done a super job.
Coming up next hour on Sports Talk, got a special guest coming in, Steve Foley, former Denver Broncos safety.
Yeah, I know him a little bit.
Jesuit Tulane star getting inducted into the Broncos Ring of Honor.
Yep, congratulations to Steve. Great honor. Didn't see him at Jesuit, but I saw him at Tulane.
We'll hear more back from him right after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk on our Treasure Chest Thursday here at the Game Bar and Grill inside the casino out in Kenner. Stop by, say hey, and get ready for Thursday Night Football, a big one tonight for the Saints Nation to be interested in. Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Atlanta Falcons dueling in an NFC South matchup. The Saints just played the Falcons, unfortunately lost to them. And after this game Monday night in Kansas City, boom, they're going to be hosting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And a matchup, unfortunately, a short week for the Saints, and it'll be an extended break for the Buccaneers going into that matchup.
Yeah, no question about it. And, man, it looks as though all them injuries for the Saints then wheeled over to the Pelicans.
Yeah, seeing that too, right, like you mentioned.
Pelicans announced today that Trey Murphy has been diagnosed with a right hamstring strain, is what they're saying. He'll be reexamined in 3 weeks.
That's going to be, what, probably right at the end of the preseason, getting ready for the regular season, I think, is October 23rd, if I'm correct.
Yeah, it happened during yesterday's practice. So we'll see what happens with Trey Murphy. They're counting on him, though.
Yeah, get well, counting Trey, for sure. Those soft tissue injuries, man, they're a pain in the you-know-what.
Man, I hear about that more than I've ever heard in my life.
Right.
Hamstring and, you know, the knee issue, soft tissue there, if it's one thing or another. But, yeah, it is part of the vernacular today. Sports-wise, medical-wise, you got to be a part-time doctor, so to speak, to go through all of it. But at least 3 weeks out for Trey Murphy.
Looking at Thursday Night Football tonight, we mentioned, obviously, Tampa Bay in Atlanta for a matchup. 3-1 Bucks taking on the 2-2 Falcons. Head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Raheem Morris, talked about this matchup against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and really got into the matchup and facing off against a guy like Kirk Cousins. And Kirk's kind of get this Falcons offense flowing. And here's what he had to say about, you know, getting things acclimated in the ATL as they get ready for this matchup.
I think now, 4 games in, you do have a sample size to work off of. I think we've ascended each week. We have improved, which is encouraging. But I think there's more to go get. And that's why I think there is a lot of excitement about Thursday night, because we see it as another opportunity to kind of continue to improve.
Yeah, what's interesting with Kirk Cousins, has had some decent performances the past 2 games, but you can tell he's still not 100%.
What? Isn't it going to be 100% all year? Okay, he never was a movement guy to begin
sure, right.
with, but now.
Looks even more stiff.
Very much so. He's got to get on the same page with Kyle Pitts. That's been something. I mean, you used an early first-round pick for Kyle. He was a dominant player at the collegiate level at tight end. He's a big wide receiver playing tight end. Man, he was beating people left and right. You saw people double-team bracketing him to try to take him out, that he wasn't going to be the guy at the University of Florida. He just has not. One, he's had injuries. And secondly, he's been disappointing beating press man coverage. They get right on top of him and say, okay, if you're going to beat me, do it. And he hasn't been able to. Where he's on the same page, man, you think about it. You know, when they signed him from the Bears, Darnell Mooney from Tulane. Man, it was quick with him.
Been an impact for sure.
And he's not the biggest guy in the world. Darnell was. He's not a big-time 6'1" receiver that's 200-something pounds. But, man, can he get up the field? He's so quick into and out of his cuts and breaks. And he's become a much, I'll use the term, cleaner receiver, catching the ball out front with his hands. I think early on at Tulane, he was a guy that was a bit of a body snatcher. Man, that ball got right there to him before he could catch it. Now he's become a much cleaner receiver catching the football. So, and Drake London, too. You can see that there's some chemistry there between him and Kirk. But, man, the thing with Pitts has got to work for them because the contract's running tick, tick, tick with Kyle. And he's never been able to really piece it together in Atlanta.
Definitely hasn't lived up to, you know, being drafted that high. And, you know, it was being talked about how he was one of these unicorns at the position of tight end.
He's a unicorn
in college.
Athlete. He was a unicorn athlete. I know that. man, can he run for a big guy? Just has not been able to translate into the pros, and you could say injuries, but there's more to it than that.
Right.
I was
blamed, obviously, in the past offense, also having not a quarterback, so we'll
okay,
see.
Okay, who are you blaming it on now?
Exactly.
So my thing with him, is this a good fit for him? Because, you know, a lot of times with players, it's not about talent, but how you fit, and does he believe in what they're doing is giving him the best chance to win out on the field? I think Drake London and Darnell Mooney believe it.
Right.
Bijan Robinson, I think if I was an Atlanta fan, I'd want to feed him the ball more running, because it looks as though Atlanta wants to use that little short pass as an extended handoff. I'd want to kind of feed the football more running-wise to Bijan and also Tyler Allgeier. Sort of beat you up a little bit, have you play in, because if you're going to play too high safety with me, okay, I run the football, one of those safeties got to come up, and then I throw it deep downfield.
Yeah, and you mentioned with Tyler Allgeier just been able to hammer the Saints. And
he's
just
a pain in the back.
He's been a good yards after carry guy, too, for this squad. And a nice 1-2 punch they have at the running back position, unfortunately, in the ATL.
Yeah, he's hard to knock off his pegs.
Yeah, you know, right.
Because, man, he's a powerful guy in the lower body. And you think, okay, I'm going to hit him high. Well, good luck. You ain't bringing him down. If you hit him high, you better go low and real low and try to trip him up. But almost like when you watch that offense the first 4 weeks, it is really not really gelled. At times you see it, and then other times you don't. Man, take away them two touchdowns the Saints sort of gifted to you. Okay, what they were doing offensively. Tyler won his battles.
Right.
I'll say that. But it didn't look like it really gelled well. And I do know one thing. If I were playing Atlanta, Deuce and I talked about this. Man, I'm blitzing him and putting people up front and trying to get after him. Now, there's the sword there. You live by the sword, you die by it, because he's a veteran quarterback. Me, he might eat you up on the back end, but I'm getting to him. I'm going after him. It'll be interesting to see, does Todd Bowles do that tonight?
I think so. And
go after him and try to get him right up the middle, not from off the edge. Because if you come off the edge with him, he's going to figure it out. But right up the middle and force the young center who's only started one game to make some adjustments.
Yeah, that's right. They're still dealing with injuries over there, obviously, on their O-line. Baker Mayfield and the Bucks, man, off to a 3-1 start. But he's another veteran guy, been there, done that before, especially even last year with his Bucks squad, and said this team is not getting too high off their early success.
Think back at last year, we were 3-1 at this point, too. Now I wouldn't say that we operated as clean and we knew our identity, but right now don't take anything for granted. Just because you start 3-1, it's a long year. Got to continue to improve and just build as the year goes on.
And I give it to Baker, because you could be frustrated of what happened in Cleveland at the end, and then what happened in Carolina. Then he gets cut loose, and he, remember they flew him in that Thursday night game with the Rams?
Yeah.
And he was
short
great.
Notice, like, you're in.
Hey, kid, get in there and make a play. Oh, thank you, coach. And they end up winning the game.
Right.
With Baker. But for him to, because a lot of times guys that have maybe not been scuffed a lot, and Baker had a college career where if they were doing any scuffing, it was him doing it to somebody else. Man, he showed a lot of mental and physical toughness to get out of there and being able to piece a season together like he did a year ago. He does have some weapons now. Man, Chris Godwin, and you think about, you know, White at running back, and Mike Evans. Those three guys, pretty good. And their offensive line is a lot of young guys, but a lot of talented young guys.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see, you know, if we end up with an offensive shootout here tonight in this Thursday night battle. I'm not sure what the
other end is. I don't know if I don't know.
Keeping it on the lower end?
I think it's a 20s game.
Okay.
You know, nothing today is shootouts.
No, we haven't seen a ton of scoring, right.
And so it's really strange. We've spent all this time we're talking about the pitch and catch part of the game. And the teams that can run the football, they win. If you can run it, all I know is the Ravens. Okay, that passing attack ain't lighting the world of fire. But, man, I got Lamar Jackson, and I got Derrick Henry. And for the old pops,
a 1-2 punch,
man,
right?
he can get it done at 30 years old. Not a lot of guys can do it with that type of power and speed like with Derrick Henry. I think he's just like 18 yards away from going over 10,000, and I think one more touchdown, he gets to 100.
Stepping away here at the Treasure Chest Casino on Sports Talk. When we get back, our special guest, Steve Foley, former Denver Bronco, also Jesuit and Tulane star. We'll catch up with him as he gets inducted into the Denver Broncos Ring of Honor. Stay tuned for that right here on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. We're located at the Game Bar and Grill in right next to us, the FanDuel Sportsbook, if you want to place a bet on tonight's Thursday night football action or any of this weekend's college and NFL games going on week five, and maybe even a Monday night action in Kansas City, the Saints taking on the Chiefs.
I was just talking to a guy about that Monday night action on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. He's going into the Denver Broncos Ring of Honor this weekend. Former Jesuit High School, Tulane University, Denver Bronco. Well, he played quarterback at Jesuit and Tulane, and safety with the Denver Broncos, Steve Foley. Steve, Mike, great to hear from you, and congratulations, buddy.
Thank you, Mike and Steve. Appreciate it.
Steve, before we talk about the Ring of Honor stuff when you play with the Broncos, man, I'm old enough, I go back. And you should never have to buy a drink or any kind of, you know, dinner or supper anywhere if you had a Tulane restaurant, because you were part of the group in 73, 25-year drought. Tulane had not beaten LSU, caught them in Tulane Stadium, and were able to win that game against LSU. And what a lot of people don't remember, the year before, Steve, you guys had them there too. And, it came down to a stop late in the fourth quarter. I think it was Racine for LSU that ended up making the tackle. But you had the 1 or 2 yard line at that point. But the feeling of that point of finally getting that heavy burden off the back of Tulane, that you finally got to beat LSU.
Yeah, you know, that game where we lost, it was actually the 1 foot line, and Frank Racine made a great tackle on our fullback. We had no timeouts. You couldn't spike the ball back then, which was interesting. And so we were out of timeouts. We had to call a play. We called a play. My back was open for a second, flipped it to him, and his time's running out, and the whole stadium just went silent because nobody knew if he had scored or not. And they uncovered those two, and he was on the 1 foot line. And it was at that time, it was a great, our defense was great. They held LSU, who were, you know, power ranked teams at that time that were going to the Orange Bowl. And we held them without a touchdown for 2 years in a row. And, you know, that game, they got 3 field goals. They beat us 9-3. And the next year, we shut them out. And so, yeah, when we walked in the locker room, we knew we had the guys that could play with LSU, that we didn't have to psych ourselves up so much to try and win a Hail Mary game. We knew we had the team to play with them. And that next year, we showed it. It was just a great team win, and we had a lot of good players and a lot of guys from New Orleans, you know, on that team.
Steve, this goes back a few years with me, and I don't know why it popped in my mind last night as we were setting up this interview, but this is, I think, the last year of when they had the recruiting bash. If you remember, it was back in February. Everybody would sign in February. Now they do it in December, and it's sort of an afterthought. There's a few guys that sign in February. So I'm at the Tiger Bash. I'm one of the speakers there. And all of a sudden, Johnny Robinson, former LSU great, now in Pro Football's Hall of Fame, he sits down next to me, and we start talking, and he brings up, you know, what are you doing today and that sort of thing. And he said, hey, when I was in the World Football League, guess who I coached? Steve Foley. And so until he told me that, I didn't piece that together. He said, Mike, I had a feeling that time, let me get into coaching. Then he said, I figured out they didn't pay too much. I had to do something else. But he said, no, Steve was in the transition from being an offensive player to a defensive player, and I coached him. And, man, Johnny was just an unbelievable safety in the 60s, early 70s with the Chiefs. And so that feeling to work under a guy who played that safety position at the highest level.
Well, I tell you what, Johnny Robinson had a huge impact on my life, not only a tremendous impact. I looked up to him as he's one of the greatest safeties ever played the game, and here he was as my coach. But Johnny had a huge impact on me as a football player and how to think as a defensive back. And he had a lot of patience with me. And but spiritually, he had one of the biggest impacts of any person, you know, in my life. And so with Johnny Robinson, I am forever grateful. I love him as a coach and as a man. And that's where I was born again. I'm at 21 years old, just watching a guy like Johnny Robinson, who was transformed by God. And I asked God to reveal himself to me, and lo and behold, he did in miraculous ways. And I gave my life to him, and I have not looked back. And God's promises and his faithfulness has been tremendous for me in my life and my family's life. So, yeah, Johnny Robinson, I love that guy.
I asked him, I said, did you think Steve would play that well on defense? He looked at me kind of, you know, sighed. He was like, oh, yeah, I knew it real quick that he could do it. Your thoughts on being inducted into the Ring of Honor in Denver? Now, I saw an interview you did. You thought when they first contacted you, this was all about Randy Gradishar, who just got inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So how did that work out when you got the call?
Well, it did. And so Patrick Smythe, who's you know, been with the Broncos for a long time, and he has a lot of, you know, he's got a big role with the Broncos and with the voting on this and presenting candidates to the Ring of Fame committee. And Patrick Smythe called me and said, hey, Steve, stay by your phone because Greg Penner is going to give you a call. He wants to talk to you about a few things. And I thought, because we hadn't had a Ring of Fame in a couple of years since Peyton Manning, and I thought that Randy being inducted, we're going to throw a big shindig, and maybe it's something about, you know, what do you think? Would we take a big contingency of players to Canton, you know, or something like that? That's where my mind was at. And when Greg Penner got on the phone and we chit-chatted about the team and about Sean Payton and, you know, how lucky we are to have him and what he did at New Orleans, which, by the way, I used to follow him all the time at New Orleans. New Orleans was always my favorite team besides the Broncos. I was pulling for them every step of the way. And every time they, you know, when they went to a Super Bowl, I'm like, come on, baby, bring it to New Orleans. But Greg Penner dropped that bombshell on me, and I didn't know what to say. I was stunned. I was like,
Steve, go ahead.
I was like, really? I was like, for real? And he said, yeah, for real. And I was like, man, that's an incredible honor. An incredible honor, Greg, and I just feel, you know, blessed and humbled and honored. And there's a lot of things in your life that you don't get to, you know, you didn't make up your genetics. You were born with them. You didn't make up whether or not you could be fast or slow. You're born with that. And you didn't get to play 11 years without getting serious injuries. You had no control over that because so many accidents happen on the field. It's a collision sport, and by the grace of God, I was allowed to do that. So I'm like just thankful and grateful.
Steve, what I think is phenomenal too, the legacy you leave behind. Obviously, the Broncos recognize that, and you last played in 1986, I think it was, but you still hold the career record for most interceptions in franchise history. That's really impressive.
Steve, they're dropping a lot of interceptions, right?
as a quarterback, you were always handling the ball. So I used to joke with some of the corners on the team and other guys. I'm like, man, if you could catch, you'd have so many interceptions. Come on. But I was, I was blessed in that area. I could catch, and you don't get a lot of them. So you kind of, and I was always playing flag football in New Orleans, you know, in the off seasons and stuff. So I loved, you know, flag football in New Orleans and touch football games and playing that my whole life. So, you know, you kind of got used to it, and I'm kind of at a loss for how did this happen to me? You know, how did a guy growing up and going to Jesuit, you know, and going to play at Tulane, 10 blocks from my house, and walking on, and Dr. Sayre and a bunch of doctors paid my first year. And he thought I'd be a good football player, and that's what he told me. And so a lot of people don't know that. They think I had a scholarship to Tulane, but I didn't. I walked on, and Dr. Sayre and a group of doctors, Klein Schmidt and orthopedic surgeons for Tulane and the Saints, and they paid my way as a freshman. Then I got a scholarship.
Man, you earned that scholarship afterwards. Steve, was there a quarterback that you saw on the schedule and you say, man, that guy, he gives me more trouble than anybody else? Was that one guy that you were geared up to say, I know that individual is going to give us a lot of issues?
Well, you know, two of them or three of them come to mind, but really, probably if I had to say, the guy that gave me the most consternation was the Snake, Kenny the Snake Stabler. I mean, not only did he have a huge line, he had great running backs. They had 3 or 4 seconds to throw the ball, so it was murder on coverage. And they had Cliff Branch, who was world-class speed on one side, and Biletnikoff, who was just a Hall of Fame wide receiver. Both of them were. And, you know, the same with Bradshaw and having Stallworth and Swan. You know, when you got a team that's got 2 NFL Hall of Famers, with like the Raiders did and the Steelers did, man, it's tough sledding usually. But we were able to hold our own, but they were great quarterbacks and had great receivers.
Steve, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. First of all, man, congratulations and well-deserved honor. God bless you, brother. And it was a little overdue, but you got in. That's the important thing.
Hey, all in God's timing. It's never too late, never too early. So I'm happy right where it falls.
Your time, Steve.
Thank you so much, Steve. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys, tremendously. Thank you.
All righty.
Man, we got the Denver Broncos Ring of Honor inductee on the air with us. That was pretty impressive, Mike.
Hey, listen to his voice. You know damn well where he grew up. He ain't lost that accent from
indeed.
New Orleans. You could tell exactly that. Maybe he's hearing us talk, so you sort of parrot it a little bit, even though I ain't from New Orleans, but whatever. Man, Steve, great player, and I remember him at Tulane those years. Man, him and Terry Looney beating LSU. Man, my dad was so upset. You know, that they beat LSU.
Oh, that had to be so monumental.
You know, 25 years.
Right.
And then it came so close the year before. And then to beat them in old Tulane Stadium. No, Benny Ellen, Benny, he would tell some stories about that. He said it was deafening that night on the sidelines. You
awesome.
Couldn't hear.
Yeah.
So he said, man, I would talk to my assistants. I would tell them, listen, this is what we're going to do. And it was like, I can't hear you.
What we're going to do is take a break. We'll be back with more sports talk. We're here at the Treasure Chest Casino inside the Game Bar and Grill, getting ready for Thursday night football between the Bucks and Falcons. Keep it right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Coming back after this. Back here on Sports Talk at the brand new and improved Treasure Chest Casino. Come check it out. We're at the Game Bar and Grill. You can stop by, say hey. Also, stick around for Thursday night football, a matchup between 2 NFC South opponents in Tampa and the Atlanta Falcons. And guys, into our triple option feature, we break down some of the top stories around sports and give our opinion. I saw this on FanDuel, one of their cards they put up on social media. After last week's performance, Jared Goff, the quarterback for the Detroit Lions, he had a receiving touchdown last week. Well, in fantasy land, you know, you look at some of the people not having a receiving touchdown yet.
I saw the list.
Okay, yeah, Goff has now more receiving touchdowns than Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, Jaylen Waddle, George Pickens, Mark Andrews, Trey McBride, Sam Laporta, and we sure hope this trend continues. Still no receiving touchdowns for Travis Kelce this year. So you can see, we talked about it a little, Mike, scoring seems way down in the NFL right now this year, and a lot of guys, a lot of teams are having troubles getting some of their big names going.
Trying to get the tight end much more involved in the offense. You know, we saw for a couple years, and I thought last year, I know, Charlie, I told him about it. It's the best tight end group I've ever seen.
Right.
Come out in one shot.
We were hoping the
shot.
Saints got somebody.
And zilch. Nothing on that end. But it's really been down on the scoring part. And, again, it's almost old-fashioned football. Play defense and run the football. Okay, it's old-fashioned, but it wins. You know, that's bottom line. You get nothing for style points. It's all about W's. For my triple option, Youngway Koo has 8 game-winning field goals since 2021. We saw him clip one Sunday.
Boo.
That's the most in the NFL over that time span of 2021. So it ain't his first time when he got up to kick that 58-yarder to win one, but figure – from 2021, now we early in 2024, he's had 8 game winners. Man, ice water in the veins for Youngway Koo.
Amazing to me to think a guy obviously was started the with the Chargers and they cut him loose.
Yeah, he was inconsistent there. He talked about I had to settle down. My nerves was a little bit shaky. And then
helps kicking at that dome.
And, man, and hitting it in Atlanta. Money well spent by Arthur Blank. Put it to you that way.
Yeah, he's definitely developed into a lethal weapon amongst kickers now in the NFL. Charlie, what you got for us on the triple option?
Guys, you mentioned it earlier, but these soft tissue injuries are just getting really aggravating. I know the good news, Kendra Miller is kind of making his return. I don't know if he's going to be playing on Monday Night Football just yet, but you know, the fact that he's back at practice is obviously a good sign. Unfortunately, you get one back in football and you drop one in basketball. And Trey Murphy, as you mentioned in the start of the hour, injuring his hamstring, a right hamstring strain. He's going to be re-examined in approximately 3 weeks via the team. It's really unfortunate, guys, because Trey Murphy is someone that still hasn't gotten this contract extension locked down with the Pelicans, and they really got to figure something out because he's a key piece of this team moving forward. But as far as, you know, how it can affect them, you know, we'll have to see the timeline. And it only says re-examined after 3 weeks, so who knows when he's going to start playing. 3 weeks from today is the day after the opener, by the way. That game against the Chicago Bulls in the Smoothie King Center is on the 23rd, so that's 20 days away. So the timeline's going to be kind of interesting to see. This is the second straight year that Trey Murphy is probably not going to be able to start the season with the Pelicans. Last year, as y'all will remember, he missed the first 19 games with a knee injury, an issue that he had in the offseason that he had surgery to fix. And then when he got back, he kind of got back into playing shape, and he was good to go by the time, you know, they were making their playoff push. So, but it's just unfortunate to see one of these talented young pieces that the Pelicans have on the wing is going to be potentially missing some time at the very start of the season.
So with a 3-week time frame to get re-examined, that's going to mean he's probably going to miss, I would say, minimum 3 to 4 games, even if it's a quick turnaround, because you got to get yourself sort of back in game shape.
Game ready, yeah.
Game ready
healthy
to
doesn't
do
mean
it.
You're game ready, right.
So hopefully it won't be the extended length of time, but man, that's Charlie used the right word, unfortunate for Trey in missing now back-to-back seasons to start off. So I wouldn't expect him to play early on.
You mentioned with Trey too, he had bulked up this year. He's up to 215.
Yeah, he
mentioned,
yeah,
and
he sure
and,
is.
You know, becoming more of a presence. He's not going to be the your biggest rebounder, but at least be able to get a body down there and, you know, make some space to get that board.
Charlie and I talk about this all the time. He's the next it guy to get paid. Okay, he's it. Man, you could tell. Man, he gets in that groove shooting, and he is really good. And he can flat out hit him from 3-point. Range.
Yeah, and obviously there were tons of questions with the Pelicans and what they're going to do with their rosters. Even a guy like Brandon Ingram, how are all these pieces going to fit in? But as we know, we talk about it in football all the time, there are the injury factor to deal with.
Yeah, and you look at it, we got to, 7 o'clock? We ain't got enough time to talk about all the stuff with from a Brandon Ingram standpoint,
yeah,
and how that's all going to play out. But I do think this – I think I'm intrigued about how they're going to work this small lineup in, because there are teams that you're going to have some real difficulties going sort of match up against.
Trey Murphy's going
to
be a key part of it.
And I agree with you, Charlie. He would have been a key part of it.
Yeah, looking at some of those matchups you mentioned, comes to mind right away. It's like, how are you going to match up against Jokic in the Denver Nuggets? They're a pretty long team.
How do you say that? Good rook.
Good rook, yeah. We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk. We're at the Treasure Chest Casino out in Canabra. Stop by the Game Bar and Grill here. We're at the back right next to the FanDuel Sportsbook, where you can place a bet on tonight's action or any of this weekend's games going on. Also seen on the TV, I had to double check. We got preseason hockey going on.
Got money on that, Steve?
No, but I was wondering. I was like, we can't be in the regular season of NHL already.
I told you, that's preseason. No, if we had another host, he passed, God bless him, buddy, he would bet on those preseason.
Even preseason hockey, huh? You don't care.
No, he always had wanted a little bit of a scratch.
Some kind of juice,
yeah,
right.
A little bit of scratch.
We're going to get some more juice when we return right here on WWL, so stay tuned after the break. Back here on Sports Talk, closing out the 5 o'clock hour. I want to remind everybody, we're thrilled to be now broadcast partner with the Pelicans, and Monday, preseason action matchup against the Orlando Magic. We'll have it from you live from the Smoothie King Center. It's a high noon start Monday. The pregame coverage with the tip-off at 12:30. Catch it on 870 AM, while Newell and Scoot will continue on WWL FM on 105.3. Coming back with more Sports Talk after this. Yes, indeed. Welcome into our Thursday edition, a Treasure Chest Thursday edition of Sports Talk. It is October the 3rd. A Thursday, getting ready for Thursday night football between the Atlanta Falcons and Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And one of many interesting matchups other than the Saints this week. Obviously, we're going to have a little more time on Sunday to watch some NFL games with the Black and Gold playing the Monday night contest. And the one that's real interesting, going to be an early start too on Sunday in London, the New York Jets taking on the Minnesota Vikings. And you will talk about one of the surprise teams this season. How about Sam Darnold and the Vikings, what they've been able to do so far? A lot of people are going to criticize who they've, you know, played thus far, saying the Vikings aren't nothing, what their 4-0 record says. But like we always say, look at who they're playing. You just got to play who you have on your schedule.
Exactly. If I'm the Vikings, I'm not the one who made up the schedule. The NFL did.
But definitely,
if you got to squawk to them about it.
A test in good old Tottenham Stadium against the New York Jets this week. I know that defense is tough for gangrene over there, and I'm waiting for that offense to get rolling with Aaron Rodgers. I'm really surprised that Garrett Wilson's kind of had a down season so far.
Man, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I got a seat right next to the owner, Woody Johnson, and say, Mr. Johnson, could you get me that Davante Adams guy?
Me and him hooked up a few times before. Yeah, it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, we pretty good on that deal. Because, look, if it don't work out, Woody Johnson got to blow it up anyway. So you take your chances here,
right?
With that spot. But you talk about Sam Darnold, and these are the numbers Sam Darnold has put up inside the red zone. Sam Darnold was 18 of 25, 118 yards, 8 touchdowns, and 1 interception. Inside the 10 this year, Darnold's 9 of 12, 45 yards, 7 touchdowns. So out of the 9 completions, 7 of them have went for touchdowns, 0 interceptions. You talk about efficient. Man, that's as good as you can find. And we talked about it, I think, Tuesday with Mark Schlereth, that Mark was the first one, and I think it was like late November last year, to bring it up that, hey, guys, because when I asked him the question, is there a veteran quarterback you think that could cash in? He said, yeah, one. He said, I talked to Kyle Shanahan, and I think it's Sam Darnold. Man, you should have seen that text line light up. Man,
is he drunk? What is he crazy? What's he smoking?
Has Mark Schlereth ever watched Sam Darnold? All kind of crazy stuff. And now look what Sam Darnold has done.
Really amazing.
And to be honest, Sam Darnold only signed there because Kirk Cousins took that money from Mr. Blank and left Minnesota to go to Atlanta. And he was going to be the stopgap guy. He was going to be the Band-Aid for when they drafted a young quarterback. If it was going to be a Bo Nix, if it was going to be J.J. McCarthy, which it ended up being, that being the guy. And then he gets hurt. And, man, Sam has played unbelievable. Unbelievable so far this season. But, man, it's a big week. If the Jets pull an El Stinko game out in London,
right,
man, on that trip back, they're gonna have a lot of unhappy folks,
and it's a long flight home.
And you know, one thing with Aaron, it ain't my fault. You blame Robert Saleh for that.
Yeah.
And man, there's the media in New York right now, they not too thrilled about Robert Saleh as the coach. And Joe Douglas, I've known Joe for a long time scout in the National Football League before he came, became a general manager. And, you know, his seat's hot, too. He's the one who picked Saleh and had all those picks.
Right.
But it wouldn't surprise me, because I think want and need are two different things, that it doesn't shock me at this point that the Jets have kind of are trying to maneuver themselves to get the inside track, you know, on Davante Adams. I think certainly the Saints and Pittsburgh are two other teams with a lot of interest. It depends on what it's going to cost. It's always, to me, about what I got to give up for a guy who's not – well, he is signed for next year, but you're not going to pay him that kind of cash.
Exactly.
What do I look at in the telescope for 2026 if I've got to give you up that much draft capital? So it won't play out this week, but I wouldn't be surprised next week is when you see movement with Davante Adams. I don't think it's going to last long.
Tick-tock, tick-tock.
And a loud tick-tock, tick-tock.
We're going to take a break. When we get back, getting into some more Pelicans talk with the radio voice of the Pels, Todd Graffanini, getting ready. Training camp underway for the Pellies, and they got a preseason game matchup before the Saints kick off against Kansas City Monday night. They're going to be taking on the Orlando Magic in the afternoon in the Smoothie King Center. We'll get into all that when we get back from the break right here on WWL at the Treasure Chest Casino. We are back at the Treasure Chest Casino, the game bar and grill, as we're getting off ready for the Thursday night football action. The Atlanta Falcons and Tampa Bay Buccaneers taking on each other in NFC South bout that Saints fans definitely interested in. Kickoff coming at 7 o'clock. We've been talking about, obviously, a big Monday night bout between Saints and Kansas City Chiefs in KC. We also got Monday preseason action for the Pelicans. It's hard to believe NBA action's back. And we'll have that, obviously, on 870 AM for you, a 1230 tip-off in the Smoothie King Center. Joining us now, too, the voice of the Pelicans, Todd Graffanini. How you been, man, at training camp?
Todd, you are our new five-star recruit we bring in here to WWL. So we're expecting very little, but we know you're going to give us a lot.
Mike, you're too kind. Steve, guys, thanks for having me on the show. But before we get into the Pel stuff, I got to tell you this. I really, really enjoyed your Steve Foley interview an hour ago. And if you'll indulge me a little bit, just have a quick story. Steve Foley is my all-time favorite NFL player that is not a New Orleans Saint. And I'll tell you why. Besides being a fellow Jesuit grad, Steve was a teammate of my stepfather, David Greiner, who was a member of that 1973 Tulane team that beat LSU 14-0 in Tulane Stadium. As a matter of fact, my stepdad had two interceptions in that game. I thought it was pretty ironic that Steve Foley would ultimately play the position in the NFL that my stepdad played at Tulane, which was called Monster Man back then. It's safety now. But the first NFL jersey I ever had was not a Saints jersey. It was the old Orange Crush number 43 Steve Foley jersey that I got my senior year at Jesuit. And when I would go to Jesuit games as a student, I would wear that jersey. So I stuck out like a sore thumb because everyone was wearing blue and white, and I had that Denver Bronco jersey with the 43 and Foley on the back. So I really, really enjoyed it, and I'm just so excited that he's going into the Ring of Honor in Denver. That's awesome.
Todd, I got to talk to him yesterday and telling him that, you know, you came aboard here to us on the Big 870, and that, you know, he's just started reminiscing. And you know what he talked about more than the win? The loss the year before. He was like, because I do remember it as a kid listening to it, and he was like, you know, I thought maybe we scored. If I'd have made a better pass, we'd have got in. And when they unpiled everybody, we were at the half-yard line, and we lost. But it gave us confidence for the next year to go up against LSU. And that stadium was so loud that night in old Tulane Stadium, you know, for that Tulane LSU game. And that's when, man, it was really something. But to break that 25-year streak, you part of that forever. And I told Steve, no matter where he lives, he's still got a New Orleans accent. If you listen to him talk, he still got it. And he laughed. He said, Mike, you're never going to lose yours. I'm never going to lose mine. You don't have the New Orleans win. You got that down the bayou one. But he said, I'm not going to lose mine either.
No, it was just awesome to hear him. And it's such a great honor. And, I mean, he played so many years in the NFL at that position. And again, as you guys mentioned, to have the all-time interception record for that franchise, which is such a storied and historic franchise. That's great. And like you said, Mike, earlier, I mean, you know, it's long overdue, but thankfully he's going to be in that ring for the rest of time. So it's pretty sweet.
Graf, you look at the Pel squad training camp on the road this year. How have things been going so far? I know a lot of excitement's building for this season, especially after last year. Obviously, things didn't end the way that everybody had hoped. But, man, that 49-win season, I know, has a lot of fans and folks excited for this coming basketball year.
No doubt, Steve. Look, it's been good to be in Nashville, you know, get away. It's good because, you know, the team bonds, you're in the hotel, and, you know, we've been practicing at Belmont University, which is about 2 miles from downtown Nashville where we're staying. So it's pretty convenient, and you get your work done. And, you know, it's been very energetic. It's been very intense. We had one practice today. The first 2 days were two-a-days. So, you know, practice at 11 o'clock on what's today? Thursday, right? So 11 o'clock practices on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then 6 o'clock night practices on Tuesday and Wednesday. And those were basically, you know, scrimmage practices. So they've been really getting after it. Today was a little bit of both, some fundamental work defensively. And then of course, the scrimmage, you know, you've got your situations. They're practicing, clutch time. They're doing set scores, how much time's left, each team with one timeout. And it actually got a little heated today, which you really like to see. I'm not saying it's time to start playing the preseason games just yet. You know, you see that in the NFL when you're playing the preseason games and doing the month of training camp. It's like, all right, it's time to start hitting somebody else. We're not quite there yet, but it was a lot of fun to watch. But no, the practices have been really, really good, really solid. And look, Willie Green's going to need every practice and every preseason game that he can get, because there are a lot of different combinations that he's going to have to figure out going into the regular season as far as who's going to play.
Todd, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think we'll get a good look at this small ball lineup. But when they're going to go big, sort of tell everybody how this is going to match up at the center position, because I get you got to play with the talent that you have and maximize that talent. The center position certainly is one in question. But when they're going to – how it's going to break down at the center spot? Because in some games you might be able to get away with playing a lot of the small ball. But against other teams that have that talented big man – you're going to have to match up pretty well.
No, you're right, Mike. And again, that's going to be one of the challenges. You know, I would say, you know, right now the Pelicans have four what you would call bigs on their roster. And that's Daniel Tice, Eve Misi, Carlo Matkovich, and Trey Jemison, who is a two-way player. So, you know, and Misi, of course, is a first-round draft pick this year. He's really raw, but he's got the size, and he just hasn't played a whole lot of basketball in his life. You know, he started at a age of about 16, 17. So, but he's what you would call really the most traditional five you have. Tice is I've been very impressed watching him. This is an NBA vet who's played on winning teams. He's played internationally. Matter of fact, played outstanding in the summertime with Germany. They made the semifinals of the Olympics, and Tice played very, very well. Matkovich, again, is someone who's played internationally as well, played with the Birmingham Squadron last year, the G League affiliate for the Pelicans, and they brought him up now this year. And, of course, Jemison is really a physical specimen out of UAB. He was actually with the Pelicans a year ago during training camp and the preseason. And then the Washington Wizard really just signed him away from the Pels. But this is a kid in Jemison who's built like a brick wall, who actually got a lot of NBA experience last year with the Wizards and then the Memphis Grizzlies. So it was good to see Jemison back. But Mike, it's really going to be all about matchups. And like you said, on a night-in, night-out basis, the players that you see in one game might not necessarily be the players in the next game. It's all about matchups in the NBA. So you know you're going to have your core that's going to play 30 minutes every night, and then after that it's going to be mixing and matching to see what matchups are the best for that particular opponent, whatever night that the Pelicans are playing.
Are you surprised, because in watching them, you know, during the summer league, Antonio Reeves, because having watched him at Kentucky, man, he could light it up. He's an untypical Kentucky guy. He didn't leave after the first year, and he was a transfer guy. So your thoughts on Antonio and how he'll fit in this on this team? I do know one thing. He can shoot. Now, defensively, we'll see how that works out. But, man, can he light it up when he gets hot?
No, he can, and he's had a solid camp, and we've seen a lot of threes go in, and really that's been an emphasis this training camp, Mike and Steve. You know, Willie Green made no bones about it on media day. The Pelicans want to get up 40 threes a game, and, you know, Reeves is somebody who can shoot. Reeves' issue right now is it's just a really crowded backcourt. I mean, you're going to have to really, really excel to work your way in to the guys that are ahead of him right now. But look, three-point shooting is at a premium in the league. That's the way the NBA has gone the last 5 years, really. So there, anybody who can put the ball in from the perimeter beyond that three-point line is going to be an asset at some point. Look, I mean, I know you're going to ask about Trey Murphy, but, you know, everybody on that roster needs to be able to step out and make a three at some point, and they've actually been really working on it during some of the drills during practice. But, yeah, look, anybody who can shoot threes is going to be an asset because that's the way the league is, and that's really the type of style that the Pelicans are going to try and employ here, and that's why preseason is going to be really interesting to watch to see if what we're seeing right now during these practices is going to translate into the preseason games and beyond.
Todd, I think the other part, too, is DeJounte Murray and the smooth – it seems to be very smooth, the transition after the deal from Atlanta and how he'll work on the offensive side for the Pelicans. From what you've seen and really what you've heard also, this seems to be almost a seamless move here. And you need a facilitator. You can have shooters, but you need a guy to set up a shooter sometimes. You just can't go down court and just take the shot from 30 feet. You need somebody to set all that up. I think he's a perfect fit here in being the setup guy, the facilitator, to help a Zion, or if it's a Brandon Ingram, or when Trey comes back from the hamstring injury. I think that's a key to this season for the Pelicans.
Mike, you're 100% correct. And just watching DeJounte Murray in person the last few days, all I can say is this. He's as advertised. And not only is he the perfect fit for this team, he was a needed fit for this team. The Pelicans' clutch record last year, I mean, it's well documented. It just wasn't that good. And the Pelicans lost so many games down the stretch where it was in the grasp to get a W, and that's the difference between 49 wins and a play-in spot as the seventh seed or 54-55 wins and a 4, 5, or 6 seed when you're not worried about the play-in. And having DeJounte Murray on the floor with the ball down the stretch is going to make a world of difference. And we saw it last night, actually, in the scrimmage. When he wasn't on the floor, it was a bit of a struggle for the blue team, who you would call, you know, the top rotation guys, they had some issues trying to score the basketball. And I went over to Antonio Daniels, who, of course, does a great job on the television side with Joel Myers. And I said, you notice this? You notice, because DeJounte wasn't playing at the time. He was watching. And he goes, that's exactly why you go get DeJounte Murray. And the thing about Murray also, Mike, is not only can he facilitate, he's a tremendous defender. He's a former first-team all-defensive player who at one point led the league in steals. And with him and Herb Jones on the floor at the same time, you've got two all-first-team defenders in the league on the floor at the same time. But he is a clutch scorer. And I'd go 2 years ago, Mike, I watched him personally beat the Pelicans or at least send the game to overtime with a mid-range shot with 5 seconds left in the game. And he is not afraid to take those shots. He can score. He had 3 40-point games last year. So he can score. He can rebound, which the Pelicans are going to need him to do. And he can facilitate. There were times, you know, earlier this week talking about him leading the league in assists. He can do it all. He is the all-time triple-doubles leader for the San Antonio Spurs franchise. And as you well know, they've had some pretty good players go through San Antonio in that franchise. But he leads that franchise with 17 triple-doubles. So, plus, he's an outstanding defender, and he's a clutch performer. He is precisely what the Pelicans need, especially in the clutch.
Todd, obviously the Pelicans need to a healthy Zion Williamson. He had a phenomenal season last year, hoping he can duplicate that type of presence in the lineup. Obviously, it was unfortunate to see what happened at the end of the year going into the postseason, but how's he looking now going into, obviously, his, hard to believe I'm saying this, his sixth season in the NBA?
Man, did that pass so fast? Talk about six seasons.
Well, I mean,
you miss some time.
Think about it. Exactly, Mike. That's the thing. I mean, it's going fast, but a lot of those seasons, you know, he wasn't playing a whole lot. So that's just it. But to answer the question, Steve, he's looked spectacular. He is in the best shape I've ever seen him. He is motivated. I mean, he realizes, to your point, Mike and Steve, this is his sixth year, and he has never played in a playoff game. And two of these seasons that two of his six, you know, the Pels were in the playoffs, and another season we were in the play-in. And of course he got hurt in the play-in game last year against the Lakers, which arguably was the best game he had ever played in a Pelicans uniform. And he gets hurt on the drive to the lane and the layup, which he got to point number 40, which was his career high. It was just, you know, it was really rough the way that it ended for him, but he is coming to camp fully motivated, in shape, and a healthy Zion and in-shape Zion is a very, very dangerous Zion for the rest of the NBA.
Todd, some of the other highlights from this team, you look at Jose Alvarado getting an extension from the club recently.
Yep.
Great story with him, and just one of those guys it's hard not to root for, considering his attitude, his effort, and just the energy he brings to this roster.
Well, Steve, it's well-deserved, and funny because we do a practice report on Pelicans.com and on a podcast. Myself and Andrew Lopez did the video report today, and our player of today's practice was Jose Alvarado. He just looks so comfortable now and in control. And it's, you know, you get the contract, and that's obviously something that weighs on NBA players. So the thing is, he's got some stability now. You know that he's under contract for the next 2 years. He's making a little money, but that has not deterred his attitude by any stretch. Jose is always going to be Jose. He's the type of player that you say, look, if he's on your team, you love him, and if he's on the other team, you hate him. Well, the good thing that is that he is a Pelican. But you think about it, guys. I mean, this is now starting his fourth year, which is hard to believe. This is an NBA veteran who has participated in huge games for the Pels. I mean, he has been in two playoff series, a play-in series, so he's got the experience. So going into his fourth year, he looks like an NBA veteran, and just really, really happy for him and his family that he's here. He calls New Orleans home, you know, undrafted out of Georgia Tech, and you didn't even know that he was even going to make the team when he came into camp his rookie year, and now he's got the contract. And look, the way he ran things today for that second unit, who are wearing the gray jerseys, it's like, all right, well, you know, when DeJounte Murray has to take a breather, you have no problem with Jose Alvarado running this team.
Odd final question for you, but is Oklahoma City the team to beat? Because all this accumulation throughout the last 3 or 4 years of all that talent, and now they've gotten a little bit of experience. They've sort of walked down that basketball court, you know, in some big games before. It seems to be set up that they're the team out west. We certainly know what's happening out east with the Celtics. Man, I'm still shocked at what the Timberwolves did to kind of help the Knicks, but whatever. Oklahoma City seems to be that team that everybody's sort of pointing at and say, hey, they're the team to beat this year.
Yeah, look, they're tough. I mean, we saw it firsthand last year, and it really just kind of all clicked together during the regular season for them. They wound up the number one seed, and of course the Pelicans had to play them as the 8th seed in the first round of the playoffs. But, I mean, look, it all starts with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's one of the premier players in the league. But to see what the supporting cast has done, what they have done around SGA, you know, Chet Holmgren, you think about, you know, his rookie year, he didn't play either. He was hurt. So he missed his rookie season. But Holmgren looked very, very strong last year, was outstanding against the Pelicans in the playoffs. Jalen Williams, who, you know, out of Santa Clara, nobody really heard of him, and he is an integral piece for that team. The thing that's dangerous about Oklahoma City is that they are so young. And like you said, they've got the experience now as far as postseason for the last couple of seasons. But, you know, it all starts with the guy who's running the show, and that's SGA, because it's the same thing like we were talking about with DeJounte Murray. When you've got a capable point guard, the ball is in your hands, and you can do what you need to do. If you have to score, you can score. If you need to facilitate, you can facilitate. And the other thing that makes SGA so dangerous is that he gets to the line as well as anybody in the league, and not only does he get to the line, he's an outstanding free throw shooter, so you're getting those free points. Look, they're going to be tough. Dallas is going to be tough. The entire Western Conference is going to be tough, guys. It's going to be one of those seasons where each and every night you better bring it or you're going to be in trouble. I mean, that's the bottom line. And the margin of error is so wafer thin. I mean, think about it. You play 82 games in an NBA season, which you think, man, that's a lot of games. And it is. It's a grind. It's a 6-7 month, you know, jaunt through the season. But ultimately, and it has for the Pelicans in the last 2 years, the difference between a play-in or a playoff team comes down to the final game. And it has the last 2 years. So every game is of uber importance, and you just got to try and win as many as you can and give yourself a chance to get out of that 7-10 slot and be a 1-6.
Todd, always great talking to you. Actually, really looking forward to hearing from you Monday. I know noon start on 8.
How about that, Geller?
Exactly, 8:70 a.m. noon start on pregame coverage, 12:30 tip-off in the Smoothie King Center against the Orlando Magic. Definitely some action before we get to Monday Night Madness with the Saints.
So, Graf, you become...
What a day that's going to be. What a
yes,
day
indeed.
That's going to be.
So, you're WWL's version of Darian Minsaw from Tulane. How about that? You addition that quarterback.
That is a compliment. That is an absolute compliment because that kid can play.
If I can be half of what he
can do, then I will take it. I am ecstatic that kid is a two-lane quarterback.
Man, we watching something special. We really are.
No doubt.
Appreciate you, Todd. Have a good one, man.
Thank you, Todd.
Bye, fellas. Thanks.
That is the radio voice of the Pelicans, Todd Graffanini. You can hear his call Monday, preseason game number one, Orlando Magic. Like I was saying, noon pregame coverage, 12:30 tip-off. You can hear that all on 870 AM, part of the WWL team. We're going to be back with more sports talk right after this, so stay tuned. We're here at the Treasure Chest Casino in Kenner, back after these words. Hey, who dat, you want to be in that number when the Saints host Tampa Bay and the Denver Broncos? Well, you can enter to win WWL's Double Saints Game Day giveaway. That's a pair of premium game tickets to both games, plus you get VIP tailgate passes from Bullseye Event Group. That's an open bar, premium liquor, all-you-can-eat buffet from celebrity chef Aaron Mayne. That's all overlooking Champion Square. Winning's easy. Just go to WWL.com/contest for your chance to win tickets to Saints Tampa Bay and Saints Denver. That's from Dudley DeBosier, official injury lawyers of the Saints and WWL. We'll be coming right back as we close out Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino on WWL after this. We are coming to a close here at the gorgeous Treasure Chest Casino here in Kenner at the bar, the game bar and grill.
Inside the game, all the way in the back.
Seeing some of the action, we got MLB action, one game going on today, Charlie. What's going on with the Mets in Milwaukee?
Yeah, so after the Mets kind of blew it in Game 2, guys, the Brewers came from behind to force a Game 3, and that hasn't really been the case a lot since the MLB decided to extend that wild card series from a best of 1 to a best of 3. This is a pretty fun stat. Only 4 of the 20 series have needed a Game 3 so far. 16 of the 20 have all been sweeps, including, you know, my Astros getting swept by the Detroit Tigers yesterday. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about what's happening right now in the only Game 3 of wild card weeks for the MLB. And so far it's 0-0 through about 3 innings, guys. The Mets and the Milwaukee Brewers. The winner advances and moves on to face the Philadelphia Phillies in the divisional series.
Charlie, were you surprised after seeing so much disappointment with the Mets the season this year from them? Because, you know, a lot of people thought over the last 2 years they were going to be a team to beat, and that wasn't the case.
No, I mean, they had their story this season could be told in multiple stories. Like, they had that crazy surge in the summer, and, you know, just kind of being able to make the postseason after it came down to a doubleheader in Atlanta, and the way that they made the postseason, which has been so fun to kind of cover. But as far as this matchup goes, yeah, I mean, they're one game away, basically six innings away from potentially getting to the divisional series. I think if you told a lot of Mets fans that back in April, they'd be pretty stunned.
Believe it. Never believe it.
Guys, we're pushing out of here, and obviously Thursday Night Football got to come on about against the Buccaneers and Atlanta Falcons. I know you picked Tampa in this one, Mike. Bucks. You think it's going to be a close matchup?
Yeah, I picked the Bucks, and I think it'll be a close game. But, man, they're playing better offensively than the Falcons are. I think both defense kind of offset one another, but I like what the Bucks are doing offensively.
Back tomorrow, fans of the Pro. Have a good night, everybody.